Welcome to the Irish Pagan School podcast. Your hosts are authors and co-founders of the Irish Pagan School here in County Waterford, Ireland, Laura O'Brien and John O'Sullivan. Fáilte.
Dag the Yee of August Fáilte. Hi, hello and welcome. It is John O'Sullivan from the Irish Pagan School and we are here with our weekly check-in chat and coffee talk. And today we're actually talking about a comment that appeared in our YouTube a while ago, and it's about angels and demons, interestingly. And so before we dive into that, though, I'd encourage you all, those of you who haven't done so far, to pop down into the description, click on that link that gets you into our mailing list and gives you access to that free downloadable resource from Laura and myself and the Irish Pagan School, which is a list of good resources, essentially where you should be driving your attention and your energy, where you should be kind of exploring for, you know, solid resources in regards to the exploration of Irish spirituality. There's been lots of information out there over the years, and not all of it is good. In fact, large amounts of it are not good, or appropriated culturally speaking, or twisted and kind of corrupted by individuals, kind of cult of personality for whatever reasons. So again, time and again, people come to us at the Irish Pagan School, and the first thing they need to do is unlearn a lot of misinformation or a lot of beliefs that they have picked up through poor resources, unfortunately. So if you are beginning on your path, if you're kind of beginning to follow this, you know, or even if you are someone who has been exploring over a while, it's worth kind of knowing where, you know, good resources can be found and how to kind of, you know, make those part of your practice going forward. So if you're inclined, pop down into the resources and pick that up. It also gets you on our mailing list, which means you'll get reminders of what awesome stuff is going on with us here at the Irish Pagan School. And yeah, you'll be get the invites to our monthly kind of hangout sessions where we just sit back and chat as, you know, global pagans setting the world to rights through just being seen and being around in community. So with that said, angels and demons. Now, it might be weird, like, you know, John, aren't you sitting here talking from the Irish Pagan School? Why are you talking about angels and demons? Well, there is scope and perspective to be shared here. Like the comment turned up on a video about the Morrigan, the shape-shifting goddess of poetry, battle, prophecy. And, you know, someone asked really like a demon or an angel, I'd love to know in respect to the Morrigan, this goddess. And as much as, you know, you might kind of look at that comment and just brush it off and say, oh, well, no, obviously, you know, it's a Christian-centric circumstance that has nothing got to do with Irish pagan gods. There is a perspective, though, to explore here, and that's what I'd like to kind of do today. And it really has to come from, like, you know, a bit of history, talking about where we get these stories from, like where we as Irish people have access to our mythology and our ancient lore. And it is because it survived in medieval texts that were documented and written down by early Christians in Ireland. Now, of course, some people look at this and go, well, sure, it was written down by Christians anyway, so you can't kind of believe any of it. That's harsh. That is actually too harsh in our mindset as people who have studied the academics, studied the law of it, studied the lore in all of its capacities that are available to us at the moment. And we give multiple pointers to that, like the Celt project from University College Cork is a really, really great one. AncientTexts.org, used to be known as Mary Jones's website, has a great number of links true to the Celt project, but also to other kind of like Celtic literature. And I'm not just talking Irish literature, I'm talking about Celtic literature. So anything that could be considered part of the greater collective, I don't want to say the word Celtic nations, because there were no Celtic nations. It's not that there were a tribe or a people, but the collected countries whose linguistic structure falls within the academic term of Celtic. So there's a lot of content available there, and we recommend people go and explore it as much as they can. But it was for the Irish, like documented by early Christian monks, because those were the people who had the skills, had the time, had the wealth, had the education in order to do it, in order to scribe out these books and to kind of like painstakingly scratch these words and the beautiful illustrations in these stretches of vellum, this lambskin. over generations. Like, you know, there's very clear in studying not just the academic or not just the linguistics of these tomes, but also studying the history and the archaeology of these tomes in many ways. Like, we know that there are multiple different hands, multiple different scripts writing different sections of it, and we can date, like, you know, the inks that were used. We can date a lot of the vellum involved. We know that these were works of generations, which is absolutely amazing to see. What's fascinating when we look back at the structure of linguistics, you know, it's possible to see where stories were rather faithfully documented from the oral traditions. And it's only in what's known as marginalia, as in little scribbles written in the margins of these texts, that we begin to see the attempted kind of bias being brought in by these individuals. And that's kind of where we find some of this angels and demons commentary. So to kind of dive straight at the question, like, no, the two of the Danann are not angels and demons. It does say that they came into Ireland out of, like, ships out of the, in like, depending on one translation, it says ships from the sky, which some people believe or try and twist into them being aliens. But when we look at the information of the lore, the two of the Danann are descended from a previous tribe that was in Ireland, the Numidians. So they're just another, their ancestor deities more than anything else. But the Christian philosophy behind all of this is that, you know, in the origins of everything, there was this war in heaven where, like, you know, the lead angel, the brightest shining angel, Lucifer, known as Morningstar, led a revolt, led a rebellion, and, you know, was cast out down into hell. But the mythology around that is that, you know, some of the hardcore followers of Lucifer were straight away down to hell, but other ones who took no side in the war were kind of caught in between heaven and hell, and those are the ones that ended up in Earth. Now, this is where the blending of these mythologies kind of is problematic, because sometimes in order to rationalize this in, it's like, well, these fallen angels who didn't really fall all the way, they're the ones who became the demons of air, the demons of, like, you know, the other world, and, you know, caught in elemental forms in between, you know, heaven and hell and the physicality of mankind. And so it's a very heavy Christian-centric narrative. And when we look at where Christianity comes from, it comes from the Hebrew faith originally, which also has these stories of angels and demons. If we go back to older faiths, again, and older spiritualities, the Zoroastrianism, which also has mention of, like, you know, shining beings doing the work and the word of God. You know, there's always this kind of narrative, but it does fall heavily on this very Christian-centric circumstance, or monotheistic circumstance, which Irish pagan isn't. Irish paganism is polytheistic, as in a belief in multiple different deities. But where the angels and demons kind of stuff crosses over, interestingly, is in these narratives, in these marginalia. And we can see it in a couple of different examples in the stories, which is where I wanted to kind of touch on and find it fascinating. Because there's a part during on the second Battle of Moytura. So the Cosmog Tura, the second Battle of Moytura, there is this section where it talks about the meeting of the men of the goddess. So Lu has arrived into Tara. Nuada has stepped aside and allowed Lu to go to the seat of the king. And he gathers, you know, a couple of lads, Nuada, Gwivnu, Dagda, Alma, Dean Hecht, and they go off to have a meeting to discuss, like, the forthcoming war. Because obviously their actions in deposing Bress, the previous king and half Fomorian, are going to lead to a conflict with the Fomorian state. They know this. And so they have their meeting, known as the Meeting of the Men of the Goddess, after which the Dagda goes to seek prophecy. And so he travels across the island of Ireland to the River Unchen. And he comes upon the River Unchen, and there, standing with one leg on either bank of the river, is a woman all in red. And, you know, she's undoing these tresses from her hair, these kind of plaits and braids. And, like, you know, he watches while she washes herself. And it says that then he comes to her in the ford in the middle of that river, and they couple there in the ford. And then that the ford on the River Unchen is then foreknown as the bed of the couple. After which it says, and, you know, the bed of the couple, because the woman is the wedded partner of the Dagda. And that's where the story kind of, as written, kind of clarifies. And that would be enough, because when this was told in oral performance, people would know that the wedded partner of the Dagda is the Morrigan. But it's interesting when we look at the way this is written down, because it's written down almost very faithfully in this oral storytelling that's been related to this monk. But then they put in afterwards, and the woman was the Morrigan. Now, it's this extra line to add in the context, and the woman is the Morrigan. But then what follows there in parentheses is Lamia, the word Lamia, which is a Latin word, which is a form of demon. And so this is where we get this demonizing of a goddess, literally demonizing of a goddess, because of her powers of prophecy, because, you know, of her, maybe because of her sexual union with her wedded partner. Like, you know, suddenly this monk is like casting aspersions by scratching in brackets, which, you know, it's not just I'll take a biro and sure I'll add that on. You know, this is I will take a quill and I will dip it in ink and I will then scratch and dip and scratch and dip. It would take a lot of fucking effort to write a single word in the format of the way this was done. And so the fact that this scribe wanted to add in the word Lamia is a big fucking deal. But also what's interesting is it was added in parentheses. It was put in brackets. It wasn't shoved directly into the narrative and the Morrigan's a fucking demon. Like, you know, it was almost like, here's where I've faithfully retold the story. I've added in a bit of extra information. Maybe the scribe asked the storyteller, but who's the woman? And he's like, oh, sure, it's the Morrigan. You know, sure, everyone knows it's the Morrigan. And so that's where we have this extra piece in. But then in order to somehow justify his allegiance, scratch brackets, Lamia. And so this is where we have this demonization of the Morrigan being put in, because it's not an Irish word. Lamia is not an Irish word. I believe it's an old Latin word, and it is a type of demon. And depending on which way you want to go back or what kind of apocryphal mythology you want to follow within the Christian circumstances, there is talk of the woman who was made before Eve. Gosh, what's her name?
Hello, this is Laura Ryan, and I want to make sure that you get access to our free gift for you, which is the Roots and Reverence Ancestral Connection Toolkit. So this is a 5-day guided exploration, which will be delivered to you free over email series, and it's as enlightening as it is grounding. It's designed for anyone who feels a kinship with Irish paganism, whether you carry Ireland in your blood, your heart, or the soul memories of lifetime past. There is no cost, only the promise of authentic connection to Ireland, as ever from us. So go to irishpagan.school/roots, that's ROOTS, to get your ancestral connection toolkit. And again, it's all free, delivered free over 5 days. There's resources, there's exercises, there's connection, there's all sorts of cool stuff. So I hope you enjoy that. It is our free gift to you for being a valued podcast member. So back to the episode.
I've gone and forgotten her name, but there's a extra element to the creation myth of, you know, well, Eve was made from the rib of Adam, and that's why, you know, women are supposed to be subservient to men, which reads like fucking, you know, patriarchal bullshit shoved into a narrative story. But there is apocryphal versions of the story that talk about the fact that there was a woman made separately and independently, but she was not subservient to man, to Adam. And that's why she was kind of cast out. And then Eve had to be made from Adam's rib so that she would be compliant and submissive. But that woman then becomes the mother of demons. No, it hasn't. Hasn't popped my memory. If anyone does know who I'm talking about, please drop it down in the comments, because that is going to annoy my brain for a little bit of time. But it's this kind of idea that, you know, women are demonized because of their power, because of their sexuality, because of their power and their independence and their the fact that they're a union, they're a partner. Even when we talk about the Dagda being referred to, and we talk about the Tuatha Dé Danann, the Dagda is the one who's referred to as the good god, literally at the meeting of the gods, goddess, the men of the goddess. The Dagda promises whatever everyone has promised to do, a whole lot of stuff, all the things you've promised, I'll take upon and do myself. And Nuada turns around and goes, well, you are the Dagda, you are the good god, and that's pretty much done. So like his acknowledgement as a god is in many ways interesting and surprising within the text, but it is put in with a small g. So it shows again that there is this faithful retelling of the stories. Like the stories aren't kind of fully twisted out of form, but when we see these marginalia, these pieces in the parentheses, and one of the other great examples is after the second battle of Moytura, after the invasion of the Fomorians has been resolved, everything kind of is being like tallied. You know, the Morrigan is standing preparing her final prophecy poetry to record, you know, who was there, who died, what actually deeds were accomplished. But on the run up to that, like in the meeting of the men of the goddess, Oma had promised to kill the bodyguard of kings and to slay a king. And so he did that. And so we have this section in the narrative where the king Tethra of the Fomorians is slain by Oma after Oma comes through and does his bodyguard as well. But Oma takes up Tethra's sword. And it's a lovely kind of section which talks about like the cultural importance of weapons and how there is it's not just a tool, it's almost like a repository of knowledge that happens over time as this weapon is used. And so there's a section where it says Oma sits down after the battle and cleans the sword of Tethra. He actually goes through a process of cleaning it, and once it's cleaned he sits with it on his knees, and it says that the sword then tells Oma all of the deeds that were done with it. And so this sword kind of informs Oma of its past, of its history, of all of its importance and everything it has seen and done. And it's a lovely kind of expression of like the culture and the cultural importance of weapons at those times, but also like in some ways, like the magical narrative that goes along with it. But here again, we see another example of the hand of these authors kind of finding some way to justify it, because we have another marginalia in brackets and it says, because there were demons in swords in those days. And again, this isn't just, I'll just lash it down here with a biro, I'll just kind of grab a pen or pencil and I'll just add in something extra. This is laboriously painstaking, like scratched on the vellum with quill from ink, and in the brackets again. And the fact that it's in parentheses really, really shows, like, here's the main narrative being acknowledged, here's the main story being followed, and then in brackets, they actually go to put in brackets, and this is where the commentary or the writer's, author's commentary comes in. And again, we find this use of the word demons, because there were demons in weapons in those days. And it's whether or not it's acknowledgement of magical practices or kind of cultural importance, and how that then is being demonized because it's no longer fitting within the orthodoxy of the particular faith structure, which is becoming more dominant in the island. Or whether these monks writing down these stories feel that like every so often they have to put in something in case some bishop or some cardinal comes along and flips through the book, they need to see, oh, well, where's the loyalty being shown? Because these books, like the Book of Ballymote, the Yellow Book of Lecan, the Book of Fermoy, the Great Book of the Great Book of Lecan, which is different from the Yellow Book of Lecan, and of course like the Book of Kells, all of these books are not just collections of these ancient mythology, they're also the ongoing histories of these monastic settlements. Like there's so much more content in these books, which is really, really fascinating. But the fact that within these pages we have this captured information of the time before Christianity in Ireland is really, really amazing, and we're delighted to still have it these days. In fact, interestingly enough, the Book of Fermoy was recently given back to the Irish people. Or is it the Book of Lismore? Book of Lismore, yeah. And so, like, it's these books, these tomes existing since ancient Irish medieval times have ended up in, like, collected works or collections of, you know, the conquerors. You know, it's an English family who actually had, like, you know, some noble English wealthy who had this book and have generously returned it back. But there's many volumes of this outside of Ireland as well, many volumes of these works. When Protestant, heavy Protestant kind of sanctions came down in Ireland, some of these works were taken out of Ireland into like France or into Spain, which were very Catholic, sympathetic in their ways, because, you know, there was a lot more in it. So some of these stories exist not just on the island, which is amazing and fantastic. But yeah, Angels and Demons. For all of the fact that there's mention of the Tuatha Dé Danann being demonized in many ways, or even when we talk about the representations of the Dag Den, how he's characterized as gross and slovenly and as oafish in certain aspects or certain ways of the stories, there is so much more content which acknowledges the culture, the living culture before Christianity, that we can't ignore. Like, it's not a case of saying, well, because it was written down by, you know, Christian monks, we need to ignore it. Absolutely not. Like, it's almost clear, because parentheses, where these biases are. And so it's fantastic to be able to have this information and to know that the stories existed before there was Christianity in Ireland, before the theology and the mythology of Christianity came into it. So angels and demons terminology doesn't really apply to the Irish pantheon in any way, shape at all, to Irish mythology, to the Irish otherworld. It doesn't really fit at all in order to answer that question. But it's interesting to look at it in the perspective that we have today, which is in the people who documented these stories out of the oral tradition and how they use those words, be it lamia or demon or demons and weapons, and tried to kind of fit the Irish narrative to match their mythology and to match the theology of Ireland, or of Christianity, sorry, around the world. Like, for example, there's timelines when we go back to the pre-Tuatha Dé Danann times. I talk about the Tuatha Dé Danann being descended from the tribes of Nemet. The tribes of Nemet were not the first tribe in Ireland. In fact, previous tribes had been in Ireland, and we want to go right the way back to the Cassarians with Cassard, and Cassard led her tribe, her group of people, into Ireland, and they existed in there before the flood. Before the biblical flood that kind of, like, you know, washed everything away and reset the clock according to the vengeful Old Testament deity. Other things of note is like Concover MacNasa, born the Ulster cycle, the king of Ulster in the Ulster cycle, is said to have been born on the same day that Jesus Christ was born. So, you know, there's many kind of things that we can see in this narrative as it's documented down by these early Christians, early Irish Christians, again, because these lads are Irish for the most part, that they want to align the narrative in with the dominant kind of cultural narrative there. But for all of that, we can still clearly see in those stories where it's pre-Christian, where the information of the culture, of the ancient gods, of the ancient landscape, the names of the places, exists well before the arrival of Christianity into Ireland. So this has been my bit of a ramble chat about it. So angels and demons terminology doesn't really apply to the Irish deities in any way, shape or form. The mythology of the angels, fallen angels caught in between heaven and hell and ending up, it doesn't fit here either at all in Irish spirituality. And neither does it fit with like the other world. People like mention, oh, well, are the fairies, is the people of the Sidhe, the people of the Hollow Hills, are they these? No, absolutely not. They're not, you know, lost fallen angels in between. Because again, all of that is of a distant and kind of enforced cultural narrative / theology. But what is fascinating to see is how, when these stories are written down by these early Irish Christians, how they needed to kind of justify almost, they needed to kind of put in something that would then clarify for, should someone up above, some above their station read it, that they're being faithful, loyal Christians. Oh yeah, because Morrigan, Lamia, definitely a demon, and because there was demons and swords in those days. It's fascinating to see as you study more and more of the mythology and of the lore. And so I would like to say thank you very much for that really awesome question. I've really enjoyed it there today. Again, do pump down into the resources, pick that up for yourself. If you'd like to get more information about what you should be reading, what can help you, or even if you want to just make sure you're on the mailing list to get the notifications about what we are doing here at the Irish Pagan School, or even pop over into the Patreon where, you know, if you had a specific question at a particular tier, you can ask that question and I will answer it in a video as best I can. So from all of us here in the Irish Pagan School, I will say Gurav Míle Maith Agus. Thank you very, very much. Look after yourself. And until next time, slán. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a positive review in your podcast listener. Then head over to irishpaganschool.com and enroll in one of our free or paid courses. Slán go fóill, and we will see you next time.